now we have some opportunity for some discussion, and yeah, I hope that we can just be as open as we wish, and maybe on this theme, if you want to share anything about this theme or what the meditation's brought up for you so far, or any thoughts about fears we may have of our own. I want to say imminent demise, but anyway, I mean gradual, right? Gradual. We can start to notice it speeding up, but actually it's happening all the time. Or maybe you're caring for someone who's dying, or you have a particular attachment to someone who you know has to die, whatever it might be. I just did a retreat on this actually in London, about, I don't know, 2 or 3 weeks ago, and it was really touching. People opened up quite a lot, and one thing about opening up and connecting around any subject really is that we realize we're all in this together. We're really not alone with our fears and our human fragility. So anything anyone would like to share? Yeah. Hi, Corinne. I'm going to name people if you don't. Oh, is that okay actually? Because it's videoed, so maybe it's not okay. You don't mind? All right, just so people know who you are.
This shifted something for me this afternoon. Two things I realized. Walking with your skeleton, but for some of us, walking with illness in the skeleton, illness in the bones. Actual potential. So the thought is there. Because when there's illness in the body, it's almost like the illness overtakes the body. It's the illness, it's not the body. And I thought, actually, it doesn't really matter whether there is illness or no illness. And I don't mean this to sound flippant, because the end result, as what we were reflecting on, is the same. So how about extending the same care and warmth and kindness to the illness, rather than the battle, the enemy, then? It just lifted something. It just lifted something. I've had some work done on my bones that might get brittle for a number of reasons. So you think, oh, I've got this inherent, always on the cusp of something perhaps breaking or happening. As you were saying, that's no way to. It's a difficult way to live. But to make peace with it, it doesn't matter. Well, it matters, but it doesn't matter in the scheme of things. There is something much bigger. So it's again coming back to that container that is just sort of coming out of the problem and actually having a much safer space to come to.
Beautiful, yeah.
And related to that, and it's important for me to put it here, and Venerable Chanda will understand why. My very best friend died, my dear companion died last year. And that was the first time I had the ability to actually hold somebody else's skeleton. Still with skin, and the body was still there. But it was 6 days after he died. And I held him for half an hour, and we talked. And that was so special because something was transmitted, holding the other person's bones, my bones holding somebody else's bones. That was the best thing I could have ever done. And I've talked to other people about it who say, oh, I want to remember them how they were.
Yeah.
But that is a quality of remembering. That is so so intimate, so nourishing. So again, thank you for today's reflection on skeleton, on bones. There is so much in this. You can take it to so many places. So.
Wow.
I feel uplifted. Thank you.
Thank you for sharing this. Really inspiring, and you know what you talk about the connection to your friend, even in death, maybe especially in death, in a sense. I think there's something about the truth of it, the truth, as you say, that this is basically everybody's destiny. This is what we all have in common, right?
Yes, because I couldn't be there when he was dying.
Yeah.
So he's dead now. It's day one, day two, or more. Does it still? Yes, it was still.
Yeah, thanks. And also for pointing out, you know, that it's the body that is basically mortal and that dies, and yet the thing that we do take with us are the qualities that we develop in our heart, like throughout our lives, you know, at least until the time that we attain full enlightenment. But actually that's what continues. It's our karma, if you like, it's our inheritance. It's all the things and the qualities that we've, you know, been cultivating. So I think that's related to what you were saying about perspective, isn't it? Like having a different perspective on what matters. Thanks for sharing something so
intimate. Thank you so much for sharing that. I feel very touched. Yeah. I can't really express how I feel right now, but it's very beautiful and very valuable.
Thank you, Karen, for sharing that. And thank you, Venables. Beautiful afternoon. I just could stay for, I would have said forever, but that feels greedy. So it's such a privilege to be here. I'm kind of really touched to be here. It feels really special for me. And so thank you for the opportunity. In regards to the death meditation and the talk, I actually enjoyed it. I have different aspects of it that appeared for me. The first one is that when I contemplate my own death, what comes up for me is gratitude, not fear, just gratitude. And I'm grateful for that. if that makes sense. And how can one not be grateful when we're sat in this present moment in this place with all that's going on? But this is not my first experience. I had a near-death experience in India, actually, and after the initial fear process through, I was left with gratitude, and for that I'm very grateful. So I'm okay with my own death, but I noticed that when I contemplate others near to me, then the fear arises, and I seem to have more of a challenge around contemplating how that will be. So kind of the loss and the, I think it's the intensity of the emotion rather than the process that worries me a little bit. So that came up. And then I had a question. I've literally just done my will quite recently, and I was doing this whole do I get buried or cremated thing. And as you started talking, I'm like, oh, maybe I made the wrong choice. Maybe I should be buried and allow the earth to consume my flesh and blah, blah, blah. And then when we went further through the meditation, I was like, okay, now I'm glad I've chosen cremation, because I've been specific about where I want to have my ashes scattered. And that includes land and sea and all sentient beings. So I kind of did a bit of a, but I'm very curious, is there a Buddhist way to deal with the body before continuation?
Thank you. Do you have a little bug on your
face? Right?
I can feel it, yeah.
Oh, it looks very,
does it look nice?
It looks happy.
Oh.
I don't think there is any specific way, and it's very much personal preference in a lot of ways. Of course, quite often the boxes that I use, I think you can do some research yourself, and you might have done more research than me in that. But I think some of the boxes that they're using, they like not really compostable. So animals or the ill bugs don't really get in there. So there's other ways that are more natural, and I think there's all kinds of new ways now as well. It's like water cremation, and I think where I come from, they also have like this forest where they basically push you in a compostable bag and it plants a tree on top of you. So that's kind of nice too, but I don't think it's legal everywhere yet. So there's all kinds of ways. But yeah, like I said, my mum was cremated, and I didn't have much of a say in that. My mum had decided that herself before that. But I took that to our monastery, and we planted a tree below Baba, because that was her favorite tree. And every time that I go, I get a little scoop of the ashes that I scatter around the tree. And then I can imagine all these like little bits of my mom going into this tree and making this tree beautiful, making it grow. It's just such a beautiful thought to be like, oh, this is, yeah, my mom's still with me. And this tree is growing. It's like, it's also the Japanese temple tree, so it fits with the monastery. And so, yeah, do what feels right for you.
Yeah, and on the other part of your, I guess, comment, was there a question around losing loved ones? Or it was more of a how to start to process some of that? And I think part of it is, I think one really important thing to remember, which I try to remember, especially related to the people that I'm most attached to, is that we don't actually know how we're going to feel at the time. What we're afraid of right now is how we think we're going to feel later. But actually in that, there's already a feeling that we can start to process. There's already a sense of dread or anticipation or fear. Or, I mean, for me, I can cry at the thought that my teacher won't always be here. I can quite easily get tears. But the more that I bring that up and the more I'm familiar with those feelings, the less they kind of worry me, if that makes sense. I think it's important to not try to make them go away or to kind of stigmatize them in any way, or to think that because I'm practicing, they shouldn't come up. And I think that will be one of the hardest things for me, the idea that, oh, I'm a Buddhist nun, and there may be people judging that and saying, you see, you shouldn't be crying. But I feel that will be something that can be a lesson in itself. And that if we can open up to our emotions and kind of be true to them and share them with other people, like give other people an opportunity to support us in that way, then it can actually be something that connects us more deeply to the people we do have in our lives. So I think for me, it's almost like anticipating perhaps that there will be emotions and that they will be normal and okay, processing the feelings that I have around that now, and kind of, in a sense, deciding to show up in my life in a vulnerable way, which I try to do every day. And just get more comfortable with that, if that makes sense. And of course, if there are people you love in your life, trying to express it, show the ways that you care, the ways that you value them, express your gratitude, you know, every day. Like really try to appreciate the qualities they have, but then also take that as an inspiration to develop those qualities in yourself.
Yeah,
and in a way, the person lives on through you, because I know for me that will become the challenge, like to kind of continue what I've learned from my teacher. And in that way,
we'll just note that I will say that I noticed the resistance came up when you invited me to tell them all the qualities that I loved about them now in real life, because it's not part of our normal relationship. So I was like, oh, is this that's something we should work with.
thank you for that to work with, but not to push through, sometimes it's not always appropriate. We don't want to kind of come on too strong, but in the same way we can show that, and we can keep it in our mind even if we're not yet ready to express it, right?
You can, like, a lot of people sometimes, like when somebody has died, they think like, oh, I wish I could have still said this, or maybe I didn't say I love you when I could. So just make sure that you do that before they die.
Just following on from that conversation, which I was thinking about the death meditations, which I've practiced in the past, and I agree that you can look at your own death with some equanimity as a result of that. But I think it'd be very difficult, you know, if one of my children died suddenly. I do think I would struggle to accept that was a part of some sort of cosmic plan or karmic kind of circumstance. And so I'd feel that that for me would be a problem. Like in many areas of Buddhism, you sort of practice equanimity, but that for me would be a fundamental sort of issue that I would struggle with.
It would for me too.
So I don't know how I'd deal with that, even if you're a practicing Buddhist.
Yeah. Well, I think first of all, drop the dogma.
Yeah.
Totally. Because to me, that's not the Buddhist doctrine anyway.
No.
That's a kind of way that we pick it up to kind of punish ourselves in a sense. I think it's the wrong understanding of karma. You know, nobody's saying that a child dies or anybody dies because of karma. The Buddha actually said there are 7 reasons for things that happen, and only one of those is karma. And he also said in other suttas that it's impossible to fathom karma. It's just too deep. We can't possibly trace back cause and effect. But the fact is that people die at all ages, and that is just the way things are. And the Buddha's not saying that that is not suffering. He's saying it is suffering. It's precisely because that happens that there's suffering, that he says birth and death is suffering, right? That's the very first definition he gives of the first noble truth. So again, it's recognizing that there is some suffering that is inevitable, and we can't predict when people die. So yeah, I think from what I've intuited myself, although I haven't had children in this life, but I used to just feel really genuine grief whenever I'd hear about a parent who'd lost a child, as though maybe if something's happened in the past life or something like this. So I think it is considered one of the most devastating losses anyone can experience, and I'm sure every parent here would probably agree with that. And yet I think the thing about suffering is that there can be unexpected opportunities to grow through it that we can't possibly conceive of, that we wouldn't wish, and we do our best to avoid such possibility. That's why a mother would sacrifice her life or a father for their only child, because we do everything we can to avoid such a thing. But in the very unfortunate case that happens, we have a choice how we respond. And one of the ways is to kind of close down, close up, feel that this has happened to me because everything's unfair, and you know, things are going wrong for me, and somehow the universe has got it in for me. Or we can recognize that this happens to others as well, and we can try and reach out to others and share our grief and share our despair and find ways to turn that into something over time, into something that can bring about more compassion. So I think we have to just embrace whatever life throws at us, or find ways to embrace that, trusting that there can be an opportunity for growth if we can apply the Dhamma to that situation, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that does make sense. Yeah. I think it's one of those things that you can think about in theory and think, yeah, oh yeah, that would be...
Well, exactly.
But then when you think about it, in reality, you think, actually, I don't know if I could philosophically cope with that.
And it, yeah.
Through the teaching and the practice,
right, help you. And maybe also it's this idea, when we think of these things happening, we think of them as like, we think of it all at once, like, how will I cope with it? And we think of all the different ways that it would be difficult, but you'd only ever have one moment at a time, right, one moment at a time. So you don't know, actually. And there would definitely be moments of complete despair and not feeling you can go on, but there'd be other moments where you were breathing and you were like able to kind of connect to the people around you and just have some hope, and that would grow, those moments would grow, and over time you would find that you are actually continuing. And yeah,
I suppose also the Buddhist idea of rebirth, you know, it's one I sort of struggle with on occasion.
Okay.
And so you kind of think,
yeah,
you know, obviously if you believe in it, then there's that comfort that,
yeah,
people, yeah, go on, and then yeah, oftentimes, yeah, if you don't believe in it, you're like, well, what's the point?
Right. Yeah, that's true. And I mean, over time that may start to feel more intuitive, but even otherwise, if you can look at a person's life and think, well, I gave them the best I could, I told them that I loved them, I did everything I could, they basically had a good life, even if it was short. I mean, the Buddha said it's better to live a single day, you know, in a good way with good qualities than 100 years of a heedlessness. So yeah, I think, you know, these things are scary, but when we're actually confronted with things, that's where the practice comes to bear. Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, it's good to reflect, because when fear comes up, it's an emotion we have the opportunity to make peace with and to understand. Yeah. I don't know if you want to add anything.
No, this is really beautiful. Thank you.
Of course, I haven't had children, so. But
yeah, when I was very 18 years old, a good friend of mine, and of course that's even more devastating, but committed suicide, and I've seen his, and was quite close to his parents, so I've seen the grief that they went through over years. And yeah, it is incredibly difficult. I think the bond between children and parents, or especially for the parents, is the strongest that there is. And yeah, in normal circumstances, if everybody gets old and then dies in old age, the parents obviously die before the children, so that's what we see as normal. But that's not always the way things go. Remember being in Bodhinyana Monastery, one Fasan, there's a wall around the monastery, and there's graves around the wall. And the one that was closest to the female Kutis, that was a young boy. And I don't actually know what happened, because I didn't say, but then I started looking at all these other graves along that wall, and so many of them were younger than me. And that brought something home. It's like, oh yeah, it's not necessarily said that I'm going to get 90 years old or something like that. I mean, I can die at any point in time, and so can the people I love. So yeah, we have to, it's a practice. It's a practice for every day, not just from when it happens.
Yeah, and also, there are other practices too.
Yes.
So sometimes we can just rejoice with what we do have.
Yes.
And practice metta and practice mudita. Yes. And that will also resource us for the time that we have to face kind of tragedies in our lives.
And why focus on the fact that your children are here right now.
Yeah.
And rejoice in that, in this present moment. This is the moment that's the reality right now. That's wonderful. So rejoice in that. Be grateful for that. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
OK.
kind of respond to that. It also brings back emotions in me back again.
Could I ask you to speak slightly louder just for the recording? Is that okay?
Yeah, that's okay.
If you can.
Because my brother lost his son in January because of suicide, and we all loved him very much. I had a strong bond too as an auntie. So yeah, and he's not practicing any Buddhism whatsoever. I found it really difficult to support him because he was in grief and anger and in the end, through emotion, we got closer and warmer and not talking maybe so much about what has gone wrong and everything, or what we could have done or not done. So it brought us so much closer, and he is so much warmer than I've ever known him, because we could clash quite strongly before. So in a way, I tried to see that warmth and that beauty. That actually reconnected. We had a good bond in the family, not through talking, but just because family. But it has become much stronger, and in a way, I think that has a beauty in it as well. We never chose it, of course. But I see that when I see stars. I think of my nephew Vessel, and I think, You bring about something, boy, in us.
Sometimes out of disaster can something really beautiful can grow.
Yeah.
That we didn't expect.
And in a way, it's a relief, I can say. Share it.
How was the meditation for people? How did you enjoy going through the skeleton? Yeah, interesting. Did anybody find it scary at all? That's resistance to this type of meditation?
Can we share?
Yes, of course.
Yeah. So for me, it's my feeling at that time, especially when Venerable us lead us to visualize our own skeleton lying in front of us. So at that point of time, I felt a split seconds of sadness, from my heart. Then, at that time I was thinking, oh no, my attachment is so great. because it's like anatomically, I've been studying a lot of all these things in the past. Then many times when I encounter a dying patient, then I just told myself, it's part of nature. This person is about to go off. Then I just don't disturb the person anymore. Just let them go peacefully and the start of things in hospital. Then when it comes back to me just now, there's 3 seconds of sadness. Oh, I'm there, I'm dead. So it actually reminds me that his attachment to myself is still there. So this is my experience.
We do have, sometimes we think we've been practicing Buddhism for long time, we don't have this attachment, we know intellectually it's this body is not me, but when it comes down to it, when that moment of death, that's there, we can see it's like where we still have this attachment, or also before it's when we get sick in some way. And I noticed that in myself as well. It's like there's this fear, oh what would it be, is it gonna be something serious? Hold on. So there's this attachment to the body still there. So yeah. I have to look into that and be like, oh yeah, okay, this is what it's like. This is what this attachment is like. And work with that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and in a way, seeing it is like already a huge step. I mean, most people wouldn't even dream of trying to visualize their own skeleton. It would be just completely scary and kind of weird, subversive. So just having a split moment where you separate that, yourself from that skeleton that isn't you dead. A split moment of, that's not much, you know? That's actually not much. So, yeah. Sometimes we can really hone in on, oh, see, there's still attachment, and then it's a problem. But it's not a problem. It's good that you see it. And just by familiarizing yourself with those thoughts and that practice, it will diminish. And I think, you know, you've got a lot of practice behind you by the time it happens. Yeah. Yeah. And also, I think it's important to have another resource. So not only focusing on overcoming attachment or whatever, clinging, identification to the body, but also developing like a really strong kind of resource of good qualities that you can then turn towards. Because I was visiting a friend who was dying recently. She was diagnosed with terminal cancer, thinking she only had like the lingering symptoms of COVID, and suddenly she was told that she had like stage four colon cancer of a very aggressive type. And yeah, the first time she told me that, she told me, I've got cancer, and she was looking quite scared, and I could already see she was so much thinner. It was quite a shock. I'd only spoken to her 2 months before. And then she underwent some chemo. And anyway, it went very quickly. A couple of months later, she was in a hospice. And it was very interesting because she was a psychodynamic therapist, very, very experienced. And the way she was describing the process was fascinating. She was so aware of what was happening and about, you know, her reactions and her relationship with the body. And she said, definitely there's times that I have a lot of fear, but there's also times when she felt this sense of real relief and a sense that there was this other kind of world calling her. And I don't mean like some cosmic other life, afterlife or something, but just this realm where the mind was more important than the body. And that she was kind of almost eager to start leaving the body, which was obviously very sick, and feeling enticed into this world that she called like, what does she call it? A room full of delight, a room of delight, where there were all these qualities like gratitude and peace and love. And it was like she was almost imagining it in a sort of, I don't know if she was semi-conscious or it was like a meditative way, but she was just saying that that feels so much more real, increasingly more real. And whenever relatives came to visit, they wanted to talk about all the things they used to do in the past and all the good times in the past. She said, I just haven't got time for that. I just want to talk to monastics about the process, about what's happening to me. And yeah, it's not that she didn't go through times of confusion and fear, but she also, this other world and these other qualities started to become very, very strong. At one point she said, oh, I don't know what's happening, but whenever someone comes in the room, whether it's one of the nurses or an assistant, I just feel so much love and gratitude without even trying. I don't know why. And I said to her, well, it's the practice you've done throughout your life. That's why. No, it's just coming spontaneously towards the end of your life. And it was weird going into her room. I could see she was much thinner than usual, but she looked brighter and more radiant than I ever seen her. And at one time she said to me, well, after all this talk about me dying, it'd be disappointing if I don't die, wouldn't it? It'd be disappointing now because she started to really look forward to it. So I think it's probably going to be like that. It's like everything's preparing us for it, but the real work is actually when it's happening.
Yeah.
You know, that's when we just, we work with what we have at that time. But it does help to kind of understand that it's the qualities you developed in your heart that are most important. Whether that leads to a rebirth or not doesn't really matter, but that's where your actual refuge and yes. peace is going to come from at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed the skeleton meditation. I like skeletons anyway. I think they're really cool. And I actually remembered when I was quite young, maybe 13 or 14, I had the opportunity to hold a real human skeleton. And it was really fun. Mm. Like it's an incredibly beautiful thing. Bones are lovely.
Mm.
And when I was visualizing my own skeleton in front of me, it was really fun.
Oh.
Beautiful. It wasn't like laid out nicely or anything. It was a pile of bones. The skull was sort of rolling off the side. And I sort of started diving in and investigating individual ones. And it was such a tactile visualization. It's like I could feel, oh, that's what a shoulder blade is like. And it's such a nice shape. It was just lovely.
Oh, wow. Thanks for sharing that. That's beautiful because you did use the word beautiful. Quite.
It is, And actually, traditionally in monasteries, they used to have a skeleton standing somewhere. And our monastery had a real skull, which because in the 1970s, if any people were studying medicine, they would have to have like these things to practice on, and in this one you could. Was completely prepared and you could take it apart and all the little bits, and it was very interesting. We have that nowadays. Everything is plastic, so it's not really the real anything anymore, but it's I find it a really interesting kind of thing. I also find it quite interesting how different people relate differently to the meditation, just in their own way. It's quite fun and others. It is very intimate kind of experience with this skeleton because of the illness, and so it's interesting how that affects different people in different ways.
We are going to have some meditation soon, but just one more thing to add is that it reminded me that in traditional Buddhist cultures also, and one of the I think methods even in the Visuddhimagga, isn't it, is meditation on the skull or on the bones. And they do talk about a stage in that meditation when you really, get quite absorbed into the skull, or the skull becomes, very predominant in your mind. They say the skull. I think it could be any part, but the skull is probably a bigger piece of bone, that it starts to glow and it starts to become the beautiful skull. So
it's a nimitta.
It becomes a nimitta that can then take you into deep meditation. So actually, if that's a good meditation for you, then you could develop it more deeply and actually get really interested in the bones and just keep going with that for as long as it's bringing a sense of beauty. And that's what they call the subha nimitta. Asubha means like meditation on loathsomeness or repulsiveness, but subha means the beautiful. So the same way we can get into the beautiful breath, when the breath starts to come along with the piti, the rapture, you can get into the beautiful bones as well. So and it's a lovely color. It's a very peaceful color. So very good. Time goes so fast. And I must say that's very very touching, actually. Yes, very touching sharing. Absolutely. Thank you to everyone who shared everything, actually, that you've shared. It has been really intimate and personal. Yes. And very moving. So I love this kind of part of the day because I feel I'm learning so much from one of you. So thank you for sharing. We have another half an hour, so I thought we could end with maybe 20 minutes meditation to close. And I don't know, usually it's the tradition in my retreats, my own little tradition, to end with metta meditation, but I don't really mind. What do you think? Who would like that? There's quite a few people nodding. If you want, you can send metta to the bones, or you can just continue with that practice if it works for you. But I think it's generally good to have a different sort of repertoire of practices, so that, and also when you're going out again to meet your family and friends, or maybe to be on your own, you know, it's good to have love and kindness in your heart. So please get comfy. Don't feel that you have to continue sitting just to sort of be the same as everyone else. You don't. You can stand up and stretch a bit, or you can change your posture. You could even lie down if you're feeling sleepy, or if you just feel that would be kind to yourself, you can lie down. However you wish to place your body, your bones. Well, bones sometimes ache and want a little bit of rest. Is the temperature okay for everyone? Temperature in here? Okay. So let's gently wiggle about. And when you're ready, close your eyes and just notice how you're feeling. Maybe noticing how relaxed you are, and whether there's anything you can do physically or mentally to bring about a greater sense of relaxation and ease. Could be an adjustment to your posture, or maybe sensing the space around you. Maybe a shift in perspective. Meditating to seek results, to meditating as a gift to yourself. Meditating to relax, to find some peace. Peace with whatever's arising right now. So see how deeply you can allow yourself to relax. Noticing the sound of the breeze, the rustling of leaves. The intimacy of being with spiritual friends. In a quiet, silent space. And just begin by sensing into your body, perhaps any areas that feel fairly at ease. Maybe even noticing those parts of the body that are sick or diseased, and extending a friendly hand of warmth. Wishing yourself well, using whatever words that come to mind, if that helps to bring around feelings of metta. Just saying these words to yourself quietly in your own heart. Phrases such as, may I be happy. May I be free. May I be safe. May I be at peace. And really meaning these phrases, meaning what you say, choosing phrases that resonate with your deepest wish for yourself. If you wish, you can put a hand on your heart. Or perhaps visualize yourself actually at peace. Content, safe, just pausing between each phrase to allow yourself to sense into any feelings. Any resonance arising in the heart, emotions, feelings of love and kindness starting to grow. Just relaxing into the practice without expecting any particular results. Enjoying just flowering yourself with good wishes. Now bringing to mind someone that is easy to develop thoughts and feelings of love and kindness towards. Someone you really care for in a very pure-hearted way. It may not be the closest person in your life, but someone who you have a simple, joyful, loving relationship with. Perhaps someone you feel grateful for. Bringing them to mind as though they were there with you right now. Perhaps noticing their face, their physical image, or just getting a sense of their presence. And wishing them well, again using your own words and sentiments. And pausing silently in the space between each phrase to allow loving kindness to grow. And spreading to include everyone here right now in this room. Getting a sense of who's here, what's been shared, time we've spent together, sitting outside or in this room. Recognizing our common wishes for peace, our noble intentions to cultivate the heart and mind, and wishing everyone well. Allowing any feelings of peace, happiness, goodwill, spread from your body. To radiate warmth and peace to everyone in this room. May we all be happy. May we all be free. Free from fear, from pain, from suffering. May we be safe. May we be at peace. And as the energy in this room grows, allow it to start spreading beyond the windows and doors to the little birds outside, the spiders, the worms, all beings in the neighborhood. Spreading across the whole of Boar's Hill, down into the city, and beyond to all the people you're about to meet, known or unknown as you travel home. Beings going on with their lives, happily or unhappily, wisely or unwisely, facing all the conditions that come to them. May they all be happy and safe. May they be at peace. May I be a cause for their happiness. Through wishing them no harm. May I share my loving kindness with all beings. And just allow the metta to keep spreading in every direction, as far as it will. To places around the world where perhaps you have family or friends. Places where people are suffering. War or famine or natural disasters, whatever it may be, and to places where people live at peace. May all beings, wherever they are, however they behave, whatever they experience right now, may all beings share our happiness, share our peace. May all beings be free from suffering. May all beings live at ease. Including not only human beings, but animals, insects, and birds, invisible beings, perhaps in different realms, large beings, small beings, the tiniest of beings. May they all be happy. May they all be at peace. Perhaps including any departed dear ones, wherever they may be. Wishing them well, sharing our merits, sharing our metta as they continue on their way. and all beings yet to be born. May they have favorable conditions for a happy and peaceful life. May they too be freed. And just resting with a wide and open heart, just being present, letting any thoughts or perceptions fade. And receiving the blessings I'm about to share. Sabbe Satam, Sabbe Pana, Sabbe Bhuta. Sabbe Pugala, Sabbe Hatabhava Pariyapana, Sabbe Itiho, Sabbe Purisa. Sabbe Ariya, Sabbe Anariya, Sabbe Deva, Sabbe Manusa, Sabbe Vinipadika. I wave a horn to Abhyapaja horn to Aniga horn to Sukhyatanam Pariharan to Dukkhamujan to Yada lada sampadito mawe gajan tu kamasaka.